Good evening once again. I'm so happy to see you all this evening. You came to as Bhante Jinananda mentioned, you all came to celebrate this day, to commemorate the Buddha's birth, enlightenment and passing away. In order to commemorate the Buddha, these three auspicious events of his life, we should recollect some of the noble, wonderful things that he brought to this world. It is said that one individual is born who brings happiness, peace, solace and comfort to humans and divines. This individual is none other than the supremely enlightened Buddha. Many a time we hear people say that Buddha all his life talked about suffering. Then one may ask, if he was born to bring happiness, why does he talk about suffering? So, somebody who comes to this world to bring peace and happiness should always speak about peace and happiness. Why does he want to talk about suffering? Many individuals have many rings, wedding rings, earrings, nose rings, finger rings, belly button rings. But all of us, all living beings, we are one ring, that is suffering. So he has to speak about that. Without speaking about it, we cannot get rid of it. In the first place, we have to recognize the truth of life. This is a very inevitable predicament that all living beings experience. We may not be aware of it, we are totally ignorant of it. So long as we remain ignorant of our suffering, we cannot get rid of it. So Buddha, when he attained full enlightenment, he surveyed the world. This is a very famous simile that we find in Noble Search, Arya Paryasana Sutta, where he said that he saw the world, especially human beings, like lotus buds in a lake. In a lake, there are some lotus buds buried under the mud. Others have come few inches out of mud. Some others have come halfway up in the lake. and others have come above water and waiting for the sun to, for them to open. This is how he saw all living beings. That means some of the beings are ready to understand suffering and liberate from suffering. They are like those lotus buds that have come out of water and are waiting for the sun, first ray of sun in the morning to fall on them for them to open. Similarly, there are individuals with the soul who at the very first touch of Dhamma open their wisdom eye to see the suffering and they liberate. They are called Uggaritanyo in Pali. That means those who come in contact with the Dhamma for the first time without any previous training, experience, practicing. The very first time they come in touch with very first few words of Dhamma, they open their eyes and see their suffering. Previous to that, they all were like stone blind person who may be wearing very dirty clothes, thinking that he is wearing clean, pure, white cloth. Once their eyes open, they look at their clothes they have been wearing and then understand that they had been wearing dirty cloth, though they were thinking that it was pure, clean cloth. As soon as they saw the dirty cloth, they immediately feel very embarrassed and immediately change it into clean cloth. Similarly, as soon as people come to understand that they have deeply rooted suffering, they immediately learn a way to get out of it and be liberated. That is how Buddha brought peace, happiness to these people. And there are some others, like those lotus buds, few feet below the surface of water. They also would open, bloom one day, but they need some time. They are called Vipanchitanya in Pali. Vipanchitanya means those who attain liberation with some delay. They need more instructions, more encouragement, more practice before they realize suffering for them to liberate. In Pali, there are three levels: Uddesa, Niddesa, Patiniddesa. Uddesa means just presenting the topic, showing the topic, mentioning the topic. The first individuals will attain enlightenment by just mere mentioning the topic. Like Bahya Dharuchirya, Venerable Mr. Upatissa, later he became Venerable Sariputta. As soon as they heard the Dhamma for the first time, they attained, Venerable Sariputta attained stream entry, Bahya Dharuchirya attained full enlightenment. And Niddesa is little further explanation of Dhamma, and then those Vipanchita new individual who at the liberation with some later time, with some delay. And then others, there are other individuals who are just like lotus buds, which are still deeper in the water, just have come out of mud, but they have to wait for some time to grow, mature, to come out of water, to bloom. They are called Nyaya. Nyaya means those who need more instructions, advice, suggestions, recommendations, discussions, meeting with Kalyana Mitra, noble or excellent friend, and meditation, urging, encouragement, lot of things need to be done for them to attain liberation. They are called Nyaya, just like holding by hand and dragging them towards the liberation and opening their eyes to see suffering. And there is another group of individuals, they are in majority. For them there is a very beautiful Pali word. I think you like to hear the word, you must remember this word. Maybe 99.99% today belong to that category. They are called Pada Parama, beautiful Pali word. Pada means words, Parama means paramount. Their best are words. They listen to Dhamma, they go to this Dhamma talk, that Dhamma talk, they discuss, they write, they read, they listen, they criticize Dhamma, analyze Dhamma, write doctoral dissertation, and they will count the number of Pali words and every syllable, every punctuation, every page, every letter. They spend entire time, all their life, talking, listening, and never put one word into practice. Which category do you belong to? So, they never taste the Dhamma. They are very much like cowherds. Cowherds look out other cows. They never taste milk, no yogurt, no ghee, no butter. They just feed the cows, get their little money, and eat junk food, but they never taste milk. Those who are, those Padaparamas, Buddha saw, are those who are buried in the mud, in the lake. So, see, Buddha was so compassionate. Even there are some people like that. Buddha, out of his utmost compassion, thought, let me teach the Dhamma. Those who have little dust in their eyes will wipe that dust out when this cool, calm, very comforting little soothing Dhamma is heard. They slowly open their eyes, wipe their little dust in their eyes, and attain liberation. So, it was that enlightenment that took place on this day. So he brought peace. How many millions and trillions of people have been born in the world? How many of them brought peace? Happiness. They just die and live and eat, drink and just pass away. They don't bring happiness. Many of them bring misery. So that kind of in us is called birth is suffering. So they bring suffering with their birth. The Buddha brought happiness with his birth. And that is a very good reason for us to celebrate this day, for bringing happiness to all of us. And he attained full enlightenment on this day, and that really brought something completely new to this world. And that is why when he attained enlightenment and realized the Dhamma, he said, Pubbe ananusutesu dhammesu chakkum udhapadi, jnanam udhapadi, panya udhapadi, nidya udhapadi, aloko udhapadi. When he attained full enlightenment on this day, he said, I open not only one, two, three, four eyes, trillions of eyes open. The whole world's eyes open to see this truth, because Buddha opened the eyes. Buddha, by attaining enlightenment, opened our eyes. Chakkum Udhapadi means not only his eyes, but he caused others to open their eyes. He caused us to open, he caused to us open our eyes. You know? Jnana Udhapadi, knowledge arose, knowledge of Dhamma. Previous to that, nobody knew anything about Dhamma, let alone knowledge of Dhamma. By his rising, he brought this knowledge of Dhamma to us. Panyav jnana mudhapadi, wisdom arose in him, and that wisdom he shared with others, with us. We become little wise today by knowing the Dhamma through the practice of meditation, following his instruction. We become little wiser. And vidya mudhapadi, science arose in us. This science that Buddha was talking about is not this science that deals with material things. All modern science that we talk about relate only to material things. That is why it is not always perfect. There are many wonderful things, and yet still there is room to improve. But the science that Buddha brought is complete science, perfect science. Nobody can add anything to it, subtract anything from it. It is perfect science. Then, aloko udhapadi, the brightness, light, arose in the world on the day he attained enlightenment. And that is the reason for us to celebrate this day, because he brought the sun, light, to us, not darkness. So, when he passed away, his passing away, we celebrate. Why? Even his passing away was something very unique. I don't know any other being who has passed away the way the Buddha passed away. Buddha when he was in Tushita heaven, he remained mindful. He was mindful while he was in the Tushita heaven, a divine being. When he passed away from there, he passed away with mindfulness. When he entered the mother's womb, he entered the mother's Mahamaya's womb with mindfulness. And it is said 10 months he stayed in the mother's womb with mindfulness. When you hear 10 months, you might surprise, how come somebody stays in the mother's womb 10 months? Normally we hear that we live in mother's womb only 9 months. Did he spend an additional month in the mother's womb? No. That depends on the calculation. In Eastern calculation, according to Eastern calculation, month has only 28 days. In Western calculation, month has 28, 29, 30, 31, and more. There's no consistency. According to Eastern way, according to lunar calendar, there are only 28 days per month. So, altogether 180 days in the mother's womb. So, during that time he stayed with mindfulness. Then he was born, came out of the mother's womb with mindfulness. And he lived with mindfulness. Even when he was practicing self-mortification, he was mindful. Many people think and say that the Buddha, Bodhisattva, spent 6 years practicing self-mortification. Friends, he did not spend all 6 years with self-mortification. No. He practiced self-mortification for some times. Sometimes he was practicing, as soon as he left home, he did not start practicing self-mortification yet straight away. No. Inekalarukarama Uddhakarama Putta and practice the assistance and practice meditation. And when he was practicing self-mortification, it was a certain period. Even during that period he practiced meditation. He did not practice only self-mortification. Self-mortification did not bring him an iota of insight and wisdom. He practiced meditation all the time. While when he did not eat very much, what did he do with the rest of the time? When he did not sleep, what did he do with the rest of the time? He meditated. So he practiced mindfulness. On the night he attained enlightenment, because he practiced mindfulness. 45 years afterward, he lived with mindfulness all the time. Perfect mindfulness. And he passed away with mindfulness. One day when he was 80 years old, he challenged bhikkhus. Bhikkhus, each one of you ask me questions. For 100 years, ask questions on mindfulness, for foundations of mindfulness. If you ask me questions, for 100 years, I remember every one of them and give you perfect answer to each question because of his mindfulness. So perfect mindfulness he had. When he passed away, 3 months before his passing away, he predicted his passing away. I would pass away on such and such a day, at such and such a place, at such and such a time. He was not an astrologer. He did not read this horoscope. his mindfulness is so powerful that he was able to predict his last second of his life. And exactly as he planned, he went to Kushinara. As he was born under sala trees, he was born under sala trees, lived most of the time in forest, jungle, under trees, although he was a prince, had the 100% fortune to live luxurious life, lived extremely simple life, and passed away under sala trees with mindfulness. He attained the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, four immaterial attainments, akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana, akinchanjana, nirsanjana, asanjana, and then came down from last immaterial attainment to the first material attainment, jhana, and then went to the fourth immaterial attainment, jhana, and then passed away. So, even his passing away is an example for us to understand, for them to understand that he was fully, perfectly enlightened being who lived with perfect mindfulness and who passed away with perfect mindfulness. And that is the reason for us to celebrate his birth, his passing away. Isn't it? It's a wonderful reason to celebrate his passing away. Then, during his teaching, he taught incontrovertible teaching. He did not teach anything controversial. Many people, they say various things, subject to criticize, analyze, controversy. Buddha's teaching is not controversial. It is perfectly rational, logical, truth. And his approach to teaching his Dhamma was very friendly. Because he respected our religious freedom. One who respects somebody's religious freedom, one would always be very, very mindful how to convey the peaceful message without hurting others. Buddha always was very, very mindful when he delivered the sermons. And he delivered the sermon with compassion. I give you one among many hundreds of examples. That is why his teaching, even today we were mentioning in our private discussion, I mentioned the meaning of sutta. What is the meaning of sutta? Some people say it is a thread, sutra. It sounds very close to sutra, so therefore they think it is sutra. Even sometimes we find it in commentaries. But the real meaning of sutta is su-utta. There is a special discourse, series of discourses called iti-uttaka. Iti-uttaka in Khuddaka Nikaya, udana iti-uttaka. Utta in Sanskrit called Upta. Purvokta. Purvokta, that means previously said or aforementioned. So Utta is said, or Ukta, or in Sanskrit, said. So Ukta means well said. A piece of Dhamma, piece of discourse, a lecture, well delivered, is called Sutta. So Ukta, well delivered. Buddha's sermons are well delivered without any controversy. When something is well delivered, there is no controversy. So, he was always mindful. You have to be very mindful to deliver the message without controversy, without confusion. And he was mindful and compassionate. My very favorite example is Upali Sutta. I believe most of our learned Buddhists are familiar with Upali Sutta. Upali was a follower of Nigantanatha Buddha, who was Buddha's rival. He came to have a debate with the Buddha, because among themselves there was a discussion. One man called Giga Tapasi, who went to see the Buddha and had a discussion with him, and returned to Nigandanatha Buddha and said, "You see, I went to see this Gautama Buddha, he has a mind-boggling and mind-twisting magic. When somebody goes and talks to him, he has such a avartani maya." Avartani maya means when you go with well-prepared questions to debate with him, he would use his avartani maya. This is mind-twisting, confusing magic, that you will change your mind and become his follower. When Diva Tapasi said to Nigandanatha, Upali was there. Upali said, "Is it so?" He said, "Yes, it is so." Then Upali said, "Let me go and have a debate with him. I can twist him. I can swing him in the ground like a strong man holding a very weak piece of paper and just swing in the ground. Flung in the ground, or fling in the ground." Nigandanatha said, "Be careful, you cannot do that." "No," the Diva Tapasi said, "don't do that. Don't try to do that, because you don't know this Gautama Buddha is so cunning." So Upali, Nigandanatha encouraged him to go. He went and had a discussion. In the discussion, it's a long discussion, of course, one question he asked the Buddha was, "Which is more powerful?" They used the word danda. Kaya danda, vachi danda, or mano danda. That means physical action, verbal action, or mental action. Which of these three is more powerful? Physical action, verbal action, and mental action. Then Buddha asked Upali, "Which of them your teacher, Nigandanatha Buddha, declares to be more powerful?" Upali said to them, "Physical action is more powerful than mental action. Stronger." Then three times Buddha made him repeat the same question and established him in the argument. And then Buddha gave one example. He said, suppose Nikantanatha, they don't drink cold water because there are living beings. By drinking cold water, they kill these living beings. Therefore, they always drink hot water without realizing in the least that when you boil water, you kill. But anyway, they drink only hot water. Then Buddha said, suppose Nilanjanatha travels somewhere where there is no place to boil water. He is thirsty. And cannot find hot water. 1, 2, 3, 4 days pass by without water. If he stays few more days without water, he will die. Now, when he dies without water, he has already determined not to drink cold water, and because of this determination, he did not put anything into action. He has determination only in the mind. He will die because he has made the commitment mentally not to drink hot water, no cold water. Then Buddha asked, is it because of physical action he died, or verbal action he died, or mental action he died? Upali said, it's because of mental action, because he made the determination in the mind not to drink cold water. So with this very first answer of the Buddha, Upali was convinced that Buddha was very sharp, clear, mindful, full of wisdom. So there were a few more questions, and immediately Upali wanted to become Buddha's follower. Then he declared, Venerable Sir, from now on, I want to become your follower. Then Buddha said to Upali, you are a well-known person, millennia. Everybody knows you. A person of your caliber, your status, should not make such a hasty decision. You think about it. Go home and think. Then Upali said, Venerable Sir, had I gone to another teacher and declared that I wanted to become his follower, he would have taken me out into the street in a procession, declaring to the world that I became his follower. You asked me to go home and think. For this reason, I want to take refuge in you for the second time. He said, but I'll go home and stop all my supports to Nikantas. Then Buddha said, Upali, if you stop your support to Nikantas, how are those poor people going to live? All these years they dependent on you. Now, if you stop your support, how are they going to live? They were depending on you all these years. Therefore, don't stop their support. You continue your support to them. Then Upali said, Venerable Sir, up to now, I have heard from others that you ask everybody to support you, not to support anybody else. Now, I hear from your own mouth that you are asking me to support, continue my support to them. For this reason, for the third time, I take refuge in you, he said. This shows Buddha's compassion, generosity, understanding and wisdom. So all his life, his approach to teaching Dhamma was like that, full of wisdom, full of compassion, full of mindfulness he lived. And then Buddha has given us freedom to investigate himself. He did not ask us to believe blindly what he taught us. Just like a goldsmith, it is said, tapat chedat cha nikashat suvarnamiva panditai pariksha bhikshavo grahyam mad vacho natu gauravat. That is in Sanskrit. He said, because just like a goldsmith, when he receives a piece of gold, he would cut it, burn it, hammer it, and run all kind of tests to verify whether it is gold or not. Only after running all these tests, if he finds that it is pure gold, then he will accept it. Similarly, because examine the Dhamma, investigate Dhamma, question the Dhamma, and then after all your investigation, examination, questioning, if you find it to be true, meaningful, accept it. This is very beautiful. There are many, many discourses. One very famous discourse, I'd just like to mention very few points from that discourse. That is, almost every Buddhist Theravada or even Mahayana knows this discourse at least by name. It is called Kādāma Sutta. Kādāma Sutta has been interpreted and more misinterpreted, understood and more misunderstood. And people, whenever they want to get by with anything they want, they say, Buddha asked us not to believe even whatever he said. People say, don't believe anything, even what the Buddha said. That is not what you find in Kādāma Sutta. Kādāma Sutta doesn't say that. Buddha did not tell us not to believe whatever he said. If he were to tell us not to believe in whatever he said, why did he spend so many 45 years teaching? At the end to say, don't believe anything, throw everything away. Why did he do that? Buddha was not that silly. Buddha did not say that in Kādāma Sutta. In Kādāma Sutta, I just don't want to be too technical, there's one word that people misinterpret, misunderstand to substantiate anything they do wrong. That is Mā Pitaka Sampradāya. Pitaka, they use the word Pitaka to support their wrong views. But the word Pitaka was not in existence in the time of the Buddha. Buddha never used the word pitaka for his teaching, he said Dhamma Vinaya. Even the word pitaka came after the third council. Tripitaka. Vinaya, Sutta, Abhidhamma. And therefore, in the Buddha's time, there was no Vinaya, Sutta, Abhidhamma, pitakas. He simply taught Dhamma Vinaya. Therefore, the word pitaka was not used in reference to Dhamma Vinaya. The word pitaka is used in reference to Veda, Vedic teaching, which Buddha categorically denied. And therefore he said, don't believe in that. But today, some people, without thinking historical development of Buddhism, and with the pure Dhamma that the Buddha taught, and the Buddha's intention of teaching Dhamma, say that Buddha asked not to believe in whatever he said. That's not correct. And the message in the Kalama Sutta is, it's a beautiful message. It is called non-controversial, universal, applicable to any religious tradition. He said, suppose he said to address to Kalamas, Kalamas, the group of people or clan of people in Kesaputta, suppose you get rid of your greed, hatred and delusion. He particularly referred to hatred. Suppose you get rid of your hatred and practice metta towards all living beings, in all, he mentioned the six directions, east, west, north, south, and across, up and down and across. So that simply means in all directions, we may say 10 directions. If you get rid of your anger, hatred, and practice metta towards all living beings, including yourself, Buddha said, would you be unhappy or happy? Definitely you will be very happy, not unhappy. And he said, suppose you think that there is no life after death. Assume that there is no, hypothetically, assume that there is no life after death. And still, if you make this practice, your daily practice, practicing metta, you will have those 11 benefits. Sleeping well, getting up well, becoming, not having nightmares, and so forth, and becoming present to human being, becoming present to non-human being, would not be affected by fire, poison and weapon, and then you will get concentration quickly and again supreme state, if not you will be reborn in Brahma realm and so forth. And you will, if there is life after death, you will be rewarded twice. In this life you will live peacefully and happily. Even after death you will be reborn in a better state where you experience peace and happiness. And this is what was solace that he presented us in Kalama Sutta, with the gist of it. So, this is what is called incontrovertible teaching. Nobody can debate, nobody can deny and reject the benefit of the practice of metta. Nobody can deny. It's a universal message of all religious traditions. And we must say, in known history of religion, Buddha was the one who promoted it, expounded it, and explained it in detail, and without any hesitation, instructed us to practice. All his life, he practiced. While he is practicing, he asked us to practice this Dhamma, this truth, and experience the taste of Dhamma, the taste of truth. What is the taste of truth? Taste of truth is, the Buddha said, taste of truth is the sweetest of all the sweet is the taste of Dhamma, taste of truth. Sweetest of all the sweets is the taste of truth. He says, Satcham have sadhu tarang rasana. Among all the sweetest things, all the sweet, the truth is the sweetest. Is it what you have heard? No. You have heard the sweet, truth is bitter. Bitter truth. Truth is bitter so long as we have garbage in our mind. But when the garbage is removed from our mind, truth is the sweetest. In Agama Sutta he said, Satyam have sadhu tarang rasana. The taste, the sweets, the sweetest is the truth. And that is what he gave us. 45 years. Ask us to taste the sweetest taste in the Dhamma. How can that be controversial, disputable? And therefore, this is a reason for us to celebrate this day, Vesak Day. Friends, even the sweetest sweet will become bitter if we overeat that. So, so let me stop the talk before it becomes bitter. I think we must, if you have questions, perhaps you can ask me. I have so many things to say about the significance of this day, but if you can stay for 2 days here, I can explain, but not now. Thank you very much for your patient listening and spending this time with us. And above all, I am very pleased to see your enthusiasm in learning Dhamma. And you are doing a very great favor to the Buddha. What is the greatest favor? Is practicing the Dhamma. Buddha said, if we want to respect the Buddha, practice Dhamma. By practicing Dhamma, Buddha doesn't get anything. He even is not living. He was so compassionate. He said, do me a favor. Practice Dhamma. That is what we have to do in order to respect the Buddha. And therefore, I am glad that you learn to respect the Buddha in a correct way. rather than practicing all kinds of rituals, we practice Dhamma and benefit from the Dhamma, live in peace and happiness as a special favor to the Buddha. This is how we have to celebrate today. Thank you very much.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.